Anybody calls me sir, I'll beg you to stick around. God, we got all the thick ones here tonight, haven't we? The Cowboys are playing, and here we are. My name's Cliff Bishop. I'm a real alcoholic. We're going to get right back into it. This is our textbook. If anybody's got a drinking problem, the best suggestion I could ever make is get one of these and commit yourself to a serious study of it. It is declared as the basic text for Alcoholics Anonymous, was done so in 1955, and has continued to be so since that time. But while we start out on Roman numeral 13, the first paragraph is a foreword to the first edition. And right underneath the title, it says, this is the foreword as it appeared in the first printing of the first edition in 1939. And then Bill says, we of Alcoholics Anonymous are more than 100 men and women who have recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. To show other alcoholics precisely how we have recovered is the main purpose of this book. If you've got a drinking problem and you want to whip it, it's suggested that you follow the directions in this book precisely. And they'll tell us a little bit later specifically. And they'll tell us a little bit later exactly. Which removes all options as to doing it my way or somebody else's way. And over on the next sentence, our page, second line down, says the only requirement for membership in Alcoholics Anonymous is an honest desire to stop drinking. Not and anything, nor or anything, stop drinking. And again, we all have problems other than drinking, but the one we have in common, the only one we can all relate to, is that one, if I drink, I get drunk, and I don't know how to not drink. In order to understand that, we go to the doctor's opinion. Step one says simply, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, our lives had become unmanageable. Two totally separate and distinct thoughts. Number one, I'm powerless over alcohol because if I start drinking, I never get enough, but it's always too much. Not once in a while, but every time. So physically, I'm powerless over alcohol. And I promised myself, my wife, my preacher, everybody else that I'll never, ever do it again. And I was unable to manage that decision, and consequently my life was unmanageable where it comes to alcohol because I lacked the power to manage that decision, to resist the first drink. So if I am powerless physically and powerless mentally, I'm screwed. And the best thing I can do is come in here and find out what these folks did to recover. We get into Bill's story, we can see the progression of alcoholism. I love the flow of information through this book. But Dr. Silkworth tells us what it is, and here we can see in Bill's story precisely how alcoholism developed in this man. A guy who was very talented, very determined, very capable. He's successful at everything he ever tried except one thing. He could not handle his drinking. And it totally but destroyed him. Bill tells us that he went to the hospital on the 11th day of December, 1934. On the 14th of December, 3 days later, he made a decision to follow the directions that Abby had laid out for him. Bill left the hospital at the end of 18, or on the 18th, the end of 7 days, lived 36 years, never had another drink. And then we get over, and he said, we got a solution. Sort of an interesting chapter. Page 17 says, we got a solution, and he talks about alcoholism. Of Alcoholics Anonymous, know thousands of men and women who were once just as hopeless as Bill. Nearly all have recovered. They've solved the drink problem. And then he comes on down. I love this last paragraph. The tremendous fact for us, every one of us, is that we've discovered a common solution. We have a way on which we can absolutely agree and on which we can join in brotherly and harmonious action. This is the news, great news this book carries to those who suffer from alcoholism. And he goes on for about 8 pages telling us about alcoholism, and over on page 25 he finally says, we've got a solution. And the solution is a complete change in the way we think and the way we feel. He calls it an effective spiritual experience. But recognizing an awful lot of alcoholics are going to get turned off with that idea, he wants to take us back through the mud one more time. But before he does, I want to go back on page 23. And let's really make sure we understand why we're here. 5 lines down from the top, it says, therefore, the main problem of the alcoholic centers in our mind rather than in our body. The fact we can't drink without getting drunk is not our problem at all. The problem we have is that we've got a mind that wants to kill us with alcohol. It's going to demand we keep on going back again and again and again. And then over on the next page, Bill tells us something very, very important, and he put it in italics so hopefully we wouldn't miss it. Page 24, it says, the fact is that most alcoholics are reasoned yet obscure, have lost the power of choice and drink. Now, if you want a definition of alcoholism, there it is. We've lost the power to choose how much we drink. We've lost the power to choose whether we or not we will drink. We will drink. And he says our so-called willpower becomes practically non-existent. That is a very singular point. As far as alcoholics that I know are not far from being without willpower. We're the most stubborn, hard-headed suckers on God's earth. We're going to have our way, except in one area. Alcohol has dissolved that part of our brain that gives us the ability to reject and resist that first drink. But look at the next sentence. We're unable at certain times to bring into our consciousness with sufficient force of memory and suffering of how long? A week or a month. The last sentence to me is the most destructive and scary sentence in the whole book. We on our own are without defense against the first drink. If we only have a week or a month after our last drink to begin to get successful, why is it so many in our fellowship encourage newcomers just don't drink and go to meetings? Let's go to 90 meetings in 90 days. This is one of the things that's killing so many of our alcoholics today. The newcomers come in here looking for help. If we've already been through a dry-out process for 2 to 4 weeks, they're already probably on their way back because the alcoholic mind has already convinced them it isn't that big a deal. If, however, we can catch them coming off a drunk, our chances are exceedingly great, well, of getting their attention, because the one time we're ready to help an alcoholic is when they recognize and feel, probably I'm going to die if something doesn't happen, and they're willing to listen. But over on page 25, he says we've got a solution, and he tells us what it is. And then he goes right back to talking about alcoholism again in chapter 3. On page 29, I think it's important to point out to everybody. 3 lines down from the top, it says, further on, clear-cut directions are given showing how that we recover. Once in a while I hear people say that's what the 12 and 12 is for. Now, that ain't going to fly, kids. For those who think that 12 and 12 is a great deal, I want you to take a look at this. This is a complete basic text for Alcoholics Anonymous. Put the 12 and 12 beside it, and this looked like a better deal. The rest of this book is a story of what happened to people who gave this thing a try. The success that comes along with becoming a student and practitioner of this book. But back on page 30, we covered it last week, we're going to cover it again. Middle of the page says we learned we had to fully concede to our innermost self that we were alcoholics, to totally surrender to the reality that I am hopeless and helpless. It's a first step in recovery. And until we do that, we have no business talking about spirituality, spiritual malady, God, higher power, or anything else. Our job now is to drive home one thought. Are you a hopeless, helpless alcoholic? And I can help you understand how. By going through the doctor's opinion, Bill's story, there is a solution more about alcoholism. Once we get to that point, we'll come on over to page 44. And Bill starts this one off at chapter 4, we agnostic. People who accept the fact there is some sort of a creative intelligence in this world, but certainly can't be on a personal basis, and since the way I've been living my life the way I have, sure can't be interested in me. But Bill says in the preceding chapters, you have learned something of alcoholism. I hate to tell you, but I went to thousands of meetings, didn't learn anything about alcoholism, but I learned a great deal about what alcoholics do as a result of alcoholism. He said, we hope he made clear the distinction between the alcoholic and the non-alcoholic. Who is Alcoholics Anonymous for? Alcoholics. We have over 200 anonymous fellowships for non-alcoholics. But let's take the test. If, when you honestly want to, you find you cannot quit entirely. How many here say, I'll never drink again, but you did? You plunked it, didn't you? Or if when drinking you have a little control over the amount you take, how many in here can't drink without getting drunk? You plunked that. If that's the case, you are an alcoholic of the hopeless variety. And look at the last sentence. If that be the case, you may be suffering from illness, which only what? 90 meetings in 90 days will take care of, right? A spiritual experience. The only hope we ever have is to find a way we can completely change the way we think and the way we feel. And we're going to do it one of two ways. We're going to do it through the Bible or we're going to do it through the Big Book. And today, the unfortunate part of it is the vast majority of us are going to reject the one thing that's perfect and assures us of recovery. And we're going to be back out there. Very, very few of us are sticking around very long. Let's go to page 45 a minute. Lack of power, that was my dilemma. I had to find a power greater than myself by which I could live. And it had to be a power greater than myself, obviously. But where and how am I to find this power? That is exactly what this book is about. Its main object is to enable you to find a power greater than yourself which will solve your problem. With over 200 anonymous fellowships using our 12 steps, that's a pretty good endorsement for this, isn't it? But it doesn't say solve your drinking problem, it says it will solve your problem. And Bill Feb was told by Eddie, if he'll do this thing, he'll have a solution to all these problems. But Fred said when he started living this program, he had a solution to all these problems. I've had to find a solution for the last couple of decades to a solution to all my problems. So we get into We Agnostics, it opens the door wide for anybody who has any real question mark about this higher power concept. And again, I repeat something that I say very often. We do not have to have any real conviction, any real belief that there is a higher power. The thing we look for is somebody that understands the problem, can help us understand it, and can demonstrate that they live, know how to live with this thing happily. And there's where we begin. Over on page 58, very first sentence tells us how it works. I don't know how many times I've heard people stand behind the podium and say, I don't know how it works. And I thought, fool, why the hell don't you get a big book, open it to page 58, and see what it says? The first sentence tells you how it works. Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. Does that tell us how it works? Dr. Bob says it's 100% effective if we follow the direction in this book. And I'll go along with that man. But over on page 59, we're going to be given the first prayer. And again, we overlook this all too often with our newcomers. From here on, we're going to have one or more prayers for each and every step of recovery. You don't believe in God? You don't want to pray? Do you want to live sober? One of the guys I ran into down at Parkland one time, we were talking about this thing called prayer. And I said, I just get on my knees and do my praying. He said, I'm sure not going to get on my knees and do my praying. I said, it doesn't make a damn to me whether you do or not. If you're a real alcoholic, you've been on your knees puking your guts out, or you can get on your knees praying and not have to puke your guts out. What's your choice? He wanted to talk with me a little bit more after that one. Five lines down. We start at the turning point. What's the turning point? Step one, I'm hopeless. Step two, I've been given some hope. An alcoholic who has recovered gave me some hope that maybe this thing would work for me. And that's all step two is, except it gives us a promise. We came to believe in a power greater ourselves that restored us to sanity. Step one, I'm powerless. Step two is a power that I must have to survive alcoholism. And this fool told me that he had found the power. I believed him. But the prayer is we ask his protection and care with complete abandon. This isn't half-ass. We weren't half-ass in our drinking. We can't be half-ass in our recovery. It's all one way or the other. And again, we are denying the newcomer the opportunity to learn to survive quickly as they come to us for help. Again, unless they've had this dry-out period. If they have, 90%+ of them are going to be back out within 90 days. So let's let them know we have a solution and be ready for them when they bounce back. The bill says down in the next paragraph, here are the steps we took. It doesn't say here are the meetings we went to. Here are the steps we took, which are suggested as your program of recovery. Now, if you can find any place in here that tells me where I can recover by going to meetings, please see me after the meeting. I've been looking for it for 23 years and haven't found it yet. Step one tells me what my problem is. Step two tells me what my hope is and possible solution. Step three says I am going to make a decision to follow the direction in this book and see if it works for me. Step four through seven, they're diagnostic steps. They tell us exactly what's wrong with us. Why is it I can't manage a decision to resist that first drink? Why is it that time after time after time, when I've really made up my mind, I'll never ever drink again, I go back and drink again and again and again? As most of you know, my last two sobriety dates are 18 years apart. I was given another chance. One of my dearest friends, old John, sitting back here telling his story, his last two sobriety dates are 22 years apart. My point is that we were given a chance. We walked away from the opportunity, and both of us went back out. Today we've been given another chance, and both of us have surrendered to this idea that in this book is a way of life that beats anything that I've ever got out of a bottle. And that's what I've got to have some reasonable hope for. Steps 8 and 9 take care of all the messes I've made with everybody I've ever known in my life. Step 10 is how I take care of this moment, how I stay free of the things that caused me to drink originally. Step 11 is where I get my marching orders from my Creator. My Heavenly Father, whether I believe in Him or not, I'm going to do what this book says, and someday I'm going to find out. One of the things, you don't have to believe in electricity to stick your finger in a socket and find out it's there, do you? All you have to do is take the action. Step 12 is what we are here for. We take the first 11 steps because we are come in powerless through the first 11 steps. We're given the power. And this is a promise. That if I will take these steps, I will have a spiritual awakening that's defined back in the book. And once I've had that spiritual awakening, I have a responsibility, and that's what I'm going to start doing pretty quick, to try to carry this message to alcoholics who suffer. And I've had to learn how to practice these principles in all my affairs, and thank God the big book gets us into that one. Over on page 61 is the story of the actor who went to run the whole show that describes every alcoholic I've ever known. I know the way it ought to be, you suckers don't, and you're going to get me unhappy at you, and I'm going to stay unhappy at you. But let's go to page 62. Selfishness, self-centeredness, that is a root of my trouble. Driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, self-pity, we step on the toes of our fellows and they retaliate. The people who wrote that were recovered alcoholics. They're talking in a past tense. This isn't something they're looking forward to. This is something they've already been. And look at the next paragraph. This nails most of us. So our troubles, we think, are basically our own making. Who, me? Those weren't my problems. It was those suckers that kept bugging me about one thing or another. But he said they arise out of ourselves. Now call it an extreme example of self-will run right, but we never think so. Bill was real kind. He said, usually, to avoid any big debate. You and I both know, though, it's never. We never think it's our fault. But he said, above everything, we alcoholics must be rid of this selfishness. We must. There's a pretty good reason why. What does it say? It kills us. I don't know why we have to go talk to somebody about that. It's either life or death. You want to live and enjoy life, or do you want to drink and die chewing on your tongue? It's a pretty simple choice. But there is the alcoholic mind that totally defeats us. That says, but my case is different. I'm not that bad. Over on page 63, we're going to get started. The thing the big book does for us, that nothing else does, is it tells us when to take a step, how to take a step, what the results will be, the promises, and one or more prayers for each and every step. Now, we've already been given the prayer of surrender. We had to surrender to the reality of alcoholism, and we had to surrender to the hope of the program when we abandon ourselves utterly to His care and direction. But if we have decided we're going to give this thing a try, we have now the turning point. I'm either going to do it my way and go to meetings, or I'm going to try it the way these suckers did it, wrote the book. If we do, and make certain that you're willing to go through the process when you make this decision. He said, many of us said to our Maker, as we understood Him, God, I offer myself to You to build with me and do with me as You will. Relieve me of the bondage of my selfishness, that I may better do what You want me to do. Take away all my problems and difficulties, and victory over them may bear witness to those I would help. Of Your power, Your love, Your way of life, may I do Your will always. That prayer is not completed. There is no amen at the end of that prayer. It is a formal prayer, simply saying, I've messed it up pretty good, God, so I am going to let You take over and see what You can do. And here we go. Now, the one thing I try to impress on kids when they make this decision is the last sentence. Underneath that prayer, it says, we thought well before taking this step, making sure that we were ready, that we could at last abandon ourselves utterly to Him. Now, some of you know that if you took the third step with me, there's something in the front of your book, isn't it? Which in the very front of your book says, Dear Cliff, you're never going to have your way again as long as you live. Love, God. P.S., if you follow the direction of this book, you'll thank me for it one day at a time. And so far, for 23 years, that thing has been working beautifully for me. But the thing that I find happens too often is that people will say, yes, I'll take this step. I will make this decision. And then they decide they have something more important to do and their life is miserable. It is amazing how many of us are given this opportunity and how few of us will ever take advantage of it. But the one thing I caution somebody on, don't ever take the third step unless you are serious about wanting to go ahead and put this thing to the test. Because if you don't, you're probably going to die drunk. And those of you who've been hitting the wind-up places know how true that is. But next, down at the bottom of it, he says, next we launch out on a course of vigorous action. Vigorous action. kind of helped me remember one old Jack Forrest Group, the guy that started the 24-hour club. But Jack talked about this preacher that had a pretty good financial thing going and a good-looking secretary. So one day the temptation overwhelmed him, and he took the money and his secretary and headed off for the islands. And it wasn't very long before the cops found him, and they brought him back, sent him to working on a cotton farm. And he wound up down there, and the old boss says, you know how to pick cotton, preacher? And he says, no, I don't. And the man says, you're going to learn. He says, I reckon I will. He said, your job today is bring in 100 pounds of cotton. Hand him a big bag and send him out in the field. Came in a little bit later and didn't have 100 pounds of cotton. They took him in the back room and just beat the heck out of him. Next morning, they handed him the bag and said, today your quota is going to be 150 pounds. He said he came back in, and again he didn't have it, and they took him in the back room and beat the hell out of him. Fifth day, they handed him the bag and said, preach, today your quota is 200 pounds. Do you think you can get it? And he said, if that damn stuff out there, I'll get it. My God, where did you all go tonight? Did I put you to sleep? I'm going home to hell with it. I'm with the Cowboys for more fun than you are. I thought it was pretty damn funny when I heard it the first time. I want to give you one more chance. If you screw it up next time, you're dead. First step is what? Well, the first thing we need to know is, when do we take it? Very top of page 64, the OR decision. Step 3 was a vital and crucial step. It could have little permanent effect unless what? At once, followed by step 4. Where do we come up with the idea we do this once a week, once a month, and one a year? That isn't the way this thing is. We'll find out where we're given permission to take a pause before the evening's over. But then he comes down and he said, therefore, we started our personal inventory, step 4. Step 4 is such a very, very important step. And so many people have relied on Hazelden's gold book or whatever these things are to float around our fellowship. I had a pile, I'm cleaning them out now. But I had a file about 3 inches thick of four-step guides that have come out of the genius of our fellowship and those who make a nice living off of us out there. We have 7 pages in this book that tell us precisely how to do the fourth step of Alcoholics Anonymous. The fourth step of Alcoholics Anonymous. Is it important to do it? I think so, because everything we're going to need in step 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, and 10 comes out of our fourth step. And if we do it some other way, we're going to miss a great deal of what we need. So let's find out how they did it. And down at the bottom of the page, it said, resentment is the number one offender. We're on page 64. One of the things that Bill learned a good bit about between the time he wrote the big book and the time he got around to the 12 and 12 was a thing called basic instincts. His association with Dr. Silkworth, with Sam Shoemaker, the director of the church in New York, Dr. Tebow, the psychiatrist, and he's a good friend and spiritual advisor, Father Ed down in St. Louis. Bill learned a good bit about human nature and what makes humans tick. And the thing he learned was that the three things that drive us are our three basic instincts, our need to be a part of, our need to be secure, and our need for sex. All three of them are very, very necessary. All God creatures are going to have those things. But the one thing he did for us, he didn't for them. He gave us a thing called self-will. The worst thing he could ever have done for people like me is give me self-will. I watch the birds out in their backyard, the squirrels, and I watch my pup. They all know exactly what to do, when to do it. And they all seem to be getting along just fine. And I had better ideas. I was going to really enjoy my instincts. And I'm not going to do a fifth step up here, but I will assure you it was an exciting thing to talk about. But how are we going to go ahead and do the fourth step? Let's do precisely the way they laid it out. Now, if you look over on page 65, just in your mind, erase those columns. And let's go down to the bottom of page 64, and it says, in dealing with resentments, we set them on paper. So the first thing we got to do is read the directions for taking the fourth step. A novel idea. Read the big book. We listed people, institutions, or principal with whom we were angry. Now, do you need any help knowing who you're pissed off at? Have you ever needed a professional to help you understand that you are really angry at people and you have been for a long time? I mean, if it happened a year ago and you're still mad at them, what's that? It's a resentment. I hate to tell you, but I run into people that don't know what a resentment is. So we get into it. They have another one before we're through talking. Let's do what the book said. Column one, I'm going to do it the way the book said. I'm going to list people, institutions, or principals with whom I'm angry, and I'm mad at old Brown, Mrs. Jones, my boss, and my wife. And I also know exactly why I'm mad at them. And that's the next thing he asked. We ask ourselves why we were angry, down at the bottom of page 64. Yeah, I know why I'm angry, old Brown. He's messing around with my wife. I'm really mad at him because he told my wife about my girlfriend. And the sucker's trying to get my job at the office. Now, with a friend like that, you don't need an awful lot of enemies, do you? I'm mad at Mrs. Jones because she's a real nut. She snubbed me. She got old Jonesy locked up for drinking. He's my drinking buddy, and she's telling everybody in the neighborhood it's all my fault. I'm mad at my boss because the guy's unreasonable, unjust. He's going to fire me because I'm stealing his money and drinking on job. These damn non-alcoholics just don't understand, do they? And my wife, she misunderstands the next, which was a part of our marriage agreement. But what really got me upset is not only does she like Brown, she wants a house in her name. That tells you pretty quick somebody's going to be in my bed that I ain't going to be there, right? Those sound like reasonable reasons to be mad at somebody? You better believe it. So now we come back and take a look at something else. Down at the bottom of the page, he said, our pocketbooks, our ambitions, personal relationships, including sex, were hurt or threatened, so we were sore, we were burned up. I cannot be mad at you if you don't threaten one of my instincts. If you don't threaten me, who I am, by challenging me on my need to belong, my need for material security, or my sex instinct, if you don't threaten that, I can't be mad at you. So he said, on our grudge list, we said off to each name our injuries, which is their self-esteem, their security, ambitions, our personal relations, sex relations, which have been interfered with. If you don't interfere with them, they don't go on the list. But he said it affects my sex relations. Messing around with my wife? Yeah, it affects my sex relations. In fact, he's messing with my wife, hurts my feelings, right? He really messed up my sex relations when he told my wife about my girlfriend, and my girlfriend found out my wife knew. That was the end of that part. And boy, did that hurt my feelings. I'm mad at old Brown because he's going to interfere with my security instinct. You know, if he gets my job, here I go. The paycheck's gone. That kind of hurts my feelings, too. I'm mad at old Lady Jones because she got old Jonesy locked up. He interfered with my personal relationship with my dear drinking buddy. And she hurt my feelings by gossiping, telling people I'm no damn good. Now, I know none of you ever experienced that, but Bill and I did. My employer, he's going to fire me. That's going to hurt my feelings big time, but it's going to hurt my pocketbook, too. And my wife, again, the house in her name, it hurts my pride, it hurts my sex life, and it hurts my relations and my security. So now I can see the threats that these people have laid on me. Now, one of the things I see very often, somebody will tell a newcomer, well, you just go, you know, take the resentment you have now. Well, that isn't what the book says. Bottom of page 65, we went back through our lives. All the way back through our lives. Nothing counted but thoroughness and honesty. That means I got to do an awful lot of digging, doesn't it? And I need to list everybody that I've ever been angry at. Now, Bill gives us a little bit of help on that. I'm not going to take time for the promises, but I am going to take time for the prayers. Let's go over to page 66. First paragraph says, it is plain that life, which includes deep resentment, leads only to futility and unhappiness. to the precise extent that we permit these, do we squander the hours that might have been worthwhile? I don't know how that hit you, but when I read that and thought about it, I thought, my God, how much of my life I flushed down the toilet trying to figure out what I'm going to do with those suckers, how I'm going to get even with them, what I'm going to say, what they're going to say. Yeah, I don't know if you ever played that game, but my I'm going to get even with you game took a good part of my life. But let's come on down to the last one. Last paragraph says, this is our course. We realize that people who wronged us were perhaps spiritually sick. Though we didn't like their symptoms and the way they disturbed us, they, like ourselves, were sick too. Here is a resentment prayer. We ask God to help us show them the same tolerance, pity, and patience we would cheerfully grant a sick friend. When a person offended, we said to ourselves, this is a sick sucker. How can I best helpful to him? God save me from being angry. Thy will be done. How many times are we going to see that one? Thy will be done. See, we took the third step. We turned all this over to His care and direction. Now it's His business. But here is a prayer. If you've got somebody on your four-step list that just stays there and you can't get around to making amends to them, use this prayer. We've got some other prayers we're going to get into. But the resentment prayer is on page 67. It's not on page 552 in the third edition. That's a wonderful prayer. Any prayer is a wonderful prayer. But I'm going to pray for me before I'm going to pray that that sucker gets everything that I wish I had, and that's the prayer on page 552. And they have everything wonderful. I'm glad they do, but right now I'm concerned about me. To hell with them. We'll worry about them later. Now, let's go down to the middle paragraph on 67. Referring to her list again, putting out reminds of wrongs others had done, but resolutely look for own mistakes. Where had we been selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, or pride? Though a situation had not been entirely our fault, we tried to disregard the other person entirely. Boy, what a trick that is. Where were we to blame? The inventory was ours, not the other man's. Now, I hear people argue there is no fourth column in step four. When we saw our fault, we listed them, we placed them before us in black and white. Is there a fourth column in step four? Don't you forget it. Because the column in step four is the one that we are looking for. My sponsor and his buddy and the years of their study and teaching of the big book came up with a format that we use in our group. It's directly from the big book, although it adds the information that Bill learned about our basic instincts. And here it is. Everybody in our group recognizes this, but if you're a visitor of our group and you haven't used this, I suggest you take a look at it because it tells you, number one, list who and what you're mad at. Column two, why. Goes through each of your basic instincts, how it affects your hopes and your dreams. And over here is, are you selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, or pride? You're going to see some of them, but you're going to miss a bunch. And that's what you're going to learn in your fifth step, and we aren't there yet. So we've got our resentments all done. What's the next thing we do? Well, down to the bottom of page 67, notice the word fear. And what we're going to do with fear is we're going to do exactly the same thing with fear we did with our resentments. We're going to list everybody and everything we're afraid of. And then we're going to list why. One of them we very often see is that I fear, you see that damn cop car, and it just sends a chill down my back. It don't bother me anymore. We get a letter from Internal Revenue Service. Holy criminy, I'm in deep trouble now, right? We know why. We go through and list everybody and everything we're afraid of. Why? And go through exactly the same examination, top to bottom in each column. And then Bell gave us a prayer down in page 68, probably about 8 or 9 lines from the bottom. We ask Him to remove our fear and direct our attention to what He would have us be. What's the promise? At once we commence to outgrow fear. I forgot to give you the promise on page 67. Let's go back on there a moment. Let's do a deep. We had the prayer to pay for ourselves. The promise of that is in the last sentence of the next paragraph. We cannot be helpful to all people, but at least God will show us how to take a kindly and tolerant view of each and every one. If you can take a kindly and tolerant view of all the assholes on God's earth, how's it going to be? Not too bad, is it? And this is what we are blessed to do as time goes on. The prayer down on page 69, though, is we ask Him to remove our fear, direct our attention to what He would have us be, at once we commence to outgrow fear. Next paragraph now about sex. We can't talk about sex. Yes, we can. We're not talking about the act. We're talking about the motivation. And again, Joe and Charlie and their effort to help us be successful in sobriety came up with a fear inventory, and again, it looks exactly like the resentment inventory, and then we come to our, they're very kind, they call it a review of our sexual conduct. Well, that's a misnomer. It's a, they have a review of our sexual misconduct, and we'll get into that momentarily. Yes, God, we're paying attention. Middle paragraph on page 69 tells us exactly how we do it. We reviewed our conduct over years past. Where had we been selfish, dishonest, or inconsiderate? Selfish, dishonest, or inconsiderate? I don't know why, but this is one that seems to be a problem for a lot of us to really get a clear picture of. Whom had we hurt? Did we unjustifiably rouse jealousy, suspicion, or bitterness? The guys have learned how to play that game pretty good, but the gals seem to, I'd say somewhere along about time they're 6 months old or in that neighborhood, come to be aware of something that they hang on to for dear life. The big book talks about it. You may have heard them say, if you've decided you want what I got and are willing to go to any length to get it, and you're going to have to take certain steps. If some of these you may buck, you may think you can find an easier, softer way. Ain't going to happen, buddy. Jealousy, suspicion, or bit. Let's go back on page 65 a minute. Let's go to Mr. Brown. Now, let's go down to my boss first. I want to put you in his position, okay? I'm working for you. You're my boss. I'm drinking on the job and stealing your money. What are you going to do with me? Or you will? You're going to be unreasonable, unjust, and overbearing and fire me?
You bet.
But you happen to be the employee now. That's a different view, isn't it? You put yourself in the position of the people that you've listed and see what you would have done if you'd been where they were. Let's take a look at old Brown. He's messing around with my wife. Who's wrong? She's wrong. Are they wrong?
You bet.
You bet they are. But remember on page 67, it says we put out of our minds the wrongs others had done. We readily look for our own mistakes. Why is Brown messing around with my wife?
Because you're not.
Well, hell, I'll... Come on up here. I'm going to start back. I hope that got recorded. I want to keep that. If I hadn't been screwing around with a gal up the street, wouldn't my wife be available? She's a lovely lady. She deserves a lot better than I'm giving. But I am having too much fun with this other gal. Who opened the door for Brown to move in and take my place? Me? He's going to get my job at the office. What a dirty rascal. My boss is going to fire me. He's going to have an opening pretty quick, isn't he? I'm mad at Brown, and all I've done is introduce him to my wife in my bedroom, and he's going to start getting my paycheck. And it's all my fault that I'm mad at him. We can go on down the list and look at these as we go through, and we're going to recognize every one of them is going to have a word, want. Want. A resentment is something that they did I didn't want them to do, and it made me unhappy, and I'm still unhappy. A resentment is something I wanted them to do they did not do, and it made me mad, and I'm still mad. My fears come from the fact that I anticipate you're not going to do what I want you to do. Or I anticipate you're not going to do something I do want you to do. And my sex conduct is violating my own standard and code. To abuse another person for my own selfishness. So back on page 69. Did we unjustly, justifiably arouse jealousy, suspicion, or bitterness? We might do these things innocently, but did we unjustifiably do it? You gals know how to do jealousy, don't you? Guys know a little bit about it, too, now. Do a little bit of flirting and see what happens to that old boy hanging on to you. Jealousy is going to crop up. And we use that to kind of get what we want, right? Well, if that doesn't do it, now I'm going to try suspicion. I'm going to tell her I'm going to be over here with you guys that I know she's going to check on me, but I ain't going to be there because I want her to be suspicious of what I'm doing. Now maybe she'll do what I want her to. If that doesn't do it, I'll come home tomorrow with lipstick on my collar around noon. Is that going to do it? Bitterness. All out of a thing called selfishness, self-centeredness. We use these things to our own advantage. But oh, I just can't resist. You all are such a dull bunch, I'm going to try you one more time. But this little gal had gotten a hold of a real good sponsor and had finally got herself where she's sponsoring people, just doing a super job. And hooked herself up with an old boy her sponsor approved of, and finally came in one day and she says, "Sponsor, my boyfriend wants to take me out to Lake Murray for the weekend. What do you think?" She says, "You're doing a good job." And she said, "It's okay." She said, "But I've never had sex, so what do I do?" And her sponsor said, "Honey, go home and read page 69. It'll tell you what you need to know." Well, the little gal was so excited and nervous that she ran home and pulled down her big book the very first thing and opened it up, and then all of a sudden confusion set in. 69 or 96? Which one was it? 69 or 96? Let's go to page 96. She knew it had to be there. That's further in the book. It has more information, right? So here's what her sponsor told her to read. "Do not be discouraged if your prospect does not respond at once. Search out another alcoholic and try again. You are sure to find someone desperate enough to accept with eagerness what you have to offer." Back to page 69. Bill gives us three prayers for our sex conduct. It's only in my opinion, but it's pretty sound. This book was written back in the 30s when I was a teenager. And sex was something that we did not talk about. It was a very Victorian atmosphere back before World War II. And I think Bill recognized that this was something that we would feel uncomfortable with, so he's given us three prayers to help us with our sex conduct. Most people know we've got one prayer or two prayers, but there are five prayers for step four. If you're somebody I'm working with, you better back only know them and use them. On page 69, the middle of that paragraph, just below the directions on doing our sex conduct, we ask God to mold our ideals and help us live up to them. You see it? Yeah. Let's go four lines from the bottom of the page. In meditation, we ask God what we should do about each specific matter. Middle of page 70. To sum up about sex, we earnestly pray for the right ideal for guidance in each questionable situation, for strength to do the right thing. And then there's something sort of interesting here. If sex is very troublesome, we throw ourselves harder into working with others. Here we are doing our four step, and they say, "Get off your rear and go find somebody to try to help." And yet we have people in our fellowship say, "You can't make 12-step calls, you can't serve on a committee, you can't do anything until you have a year of sobriety." And then I heard the most ridiculous one here the other day. "Until you have 5 years of sobriety, you cannot talk to one of our patients, residents, whatever." I'm going to tell the whole bunch of you, and I don't care who you tell. You pick a sobriety date that is advanced well beyond what the requirement is and hang on to it. If somebody asks you how long you've been sober, lie, damn it. I'm far more concerned that you survive alcoholism than I am you abiding by some foolish concept that is totally in conflict with what we're about. The people who stay sober are the ones who get busy working with others. And I'll tell you what, I'm going to be investing time with you, within a month, you're going to be at one of the wind-up places looking for somebody to sponsor. We're not going to mess around with you. Get in and do it, or go die. So now I've got my four-step done. Page 71 says, we hope you are now convinced that God can remove whatever self-will you blocked off from you. Because if you've gone through this thing, you've realized a few things. You've had a change in the way you think and the way you feel. You're beginning to see a little bit of truth. And that's what he's saying. If you've already made a decision, step three, in an inventory of your gross or handicapped, step four, you've made a beginning. Until you've done the fourth step, you have not begun anything. Going to meetings is not a beginning. Not a beginning at all. That being the case, you swallowed and digested some big chunks of truth about yourself. And early on, Joe said, the truth will set you free, but until it does, it'll beat your damn brains out, and it sure will. Page 75. When do we take step five? First sentence, first paragraph. When we decide who's to hear our story, we waste no time. How do we take step five? First sentence, next paragraph. We pocket our pride, go to illuminate every twist of church or every dark cranny in the past. What are the promises of step five once we've taken a step with holding nothing? We are delighted. We can look be alone at perfect peace, or we can look the world in the eyes. We can be alone at perfect peace and ease. Our fears fall from us. The feeling that the drink problem has disappeared will often come strong when we feel we are on a Broadway walking hand in hand with the Spirit of the Universe. And now we're given 1 hour. This is the only place in taking the 12 steps that we have been given a break. And the last paragraph says, returning home, we find a place where we can be quiet for 1 hour, 60 minutes. And we begin that with the first of the two fifth-step prayers. We thank God from the bottom of our heart that we know Him better. And this is what I ask my kids to do. At the beginning of this hour, you get on your knees and you pray this prayer. You may not know Him very well, but you know Him a lot better now than you did before you and I sat down and started. Because when you walk out of this thing, you're going to know for certain how selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, frightened, and inconsiderate you are. I remember very clearly when my sponsor got through with me in 1984. We got through with my fourth and fifth step, and he just looked at me and said, "Do you see what a selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, frightened, and inconsiderate asshole you are?" And I said, "Yes, I do." And so I did. Now, we thank God from the bottom of our heart. We know Him better. Taking this book down from our shelf, I had one of my guys, I had to get real tickled. His book was laying on the coffee table, and he just picked it up, put it back on the shelf so he could get it down like the book said. Incidentally, he's doing a hell of a good job. Carefully reading the first five proposals, we ask. Oh, what a subtle prayer that one is. Right in the middle of the sentence. Who are you going to ask? It's you, the big book, all by yourself? In prayerful connection with the God or power of your understanding. And once we do that, then we'll go over to page 76 and a little bitty paragraph. Say, well, hell, there ain't anything to this. Bill told us back on page 12, the only thing we must have to be successful in our program of recovery is willingness to do it. Just willingness. And that's what he says, if you really understand now what's wrong with you. You see, step 4 and 5 are diagnostic steps. They really help us understand, why is it that I can no longer manage that decision to stop drinking? We learn the truth. The truth is that my selfishness, self-seeking, dishonest, resentful, frightened way of living is what caused that active alcoholic mind to say, you've got to have a drink. I have now been properly diagnosed. I know exactly what my problem is. It's the way I think, the way I feel. And if I keep on thinking and feeling the way I've been thinking and feeling, what am I going to do? I'm going to keep right on drinking. That's the only solution I know. That's the only way that I can have a complete change in the way I think and the way I feel. But now I've learned what's wrong with me, and I have started becoming a little bit happy with the way life is. I felt an awful lot better when I was through step 5. Step 6 is, do you have the willingness to become a student and practitioner of the material in this book? It is a commitment. What it is an absolute commitment to your great position to change the way you think and the way you feel. Like any major illness, step 1 is my problem. You get a real bad case of flu, you aren't going anywhere but lay there and be miserable, right? You think about maybe if I see the doctor, he'd make me feel better? Go see the doctor. The hope is in step 2, the decision's in step 3. We get out there, and let's say we've been having real serious chest pains. Step 4 is where he orders the test to be run. And he's going to run the test, and then when he's through with that, he's going to sit down and have a visit with us, right? Going to ask a few questions. Do you drink? Oh, a little bit. Sorry. But we now look at the reality. I have a condition in my chest called lung cancer. And there's only two things that this doctor says he can do, but if I do them, it's absolutely certain I will survive. As long as I keep doing what he tells me to do, I'll survive at this lung cancer. Our case is called alcoholism. And the only treatment we've ever been given are the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. The first 7 of them, get it prepared to start recovering. Step 6 is where he tells me what I've got to do, and I say, okay, if that's what I've got to do, I'll do it. I am willing to do it. Does he start doing it then? Nope. He's going to make you sign something, isn't he? He's going to make you commit to it. Now, if you don't have the willingness to do all of it, look at the last sentence on that little paragraph at the top of the page. If we still cling to something we will not let go, we ask God to help us be willing. There's a six-step prayer. And when Sam Shoemaker looked at this, if you've ever looked at 12 and 12 on step 6, the very first sentence says, this is a step that separates the men from the boys. And it damn sure does. So if you have made your commitment that you're willing to become a student practitioner of the book, then you can go ahead and let God know, start doing His job. If you're going to do what it says from page 76, the middle of page 76 to page 164, to the best of your understanding. Now, I hear these people say, the best of my ability. This is so exceedingly simple, any fool can do it. I did it, so there's proof. Then we do it to the best of our willingness. And after we've done it a while to the best of our willingness, the results are so wonderful, we do it because we really want to do it. We do it to the best of our understanding. Now, Joe's been studying the Big Book for 46 years, and he told me in July he hadn't got it right yet. I've been doing it 23 years, yeah, I haven't got it right yet. And every Tuesday and Thursday night, we sit down and go through this in our meetings, I get a new understanding, a new slant. Something new is given me. This is the most unreal book that has ever been published, I do believe. By alcoholics, for alcoholics. It doesn't need to be interpreted, for God's sake. You just need to read the black on the white, and it'll all be there. Have you made that commitment? If you have, let's go on. When ready, we say something like this, my Creator, I'm now willing that you should have all of me, good and bad. God, I love that. This old preacher in here for years, and wherever I've been, I thought, you know, God gets the good stuff, and I got the bad stuff till I can figure out what to do about quit thinking about girls. Dill says, hell, I can give him that too. Are we now ready to let, excuse me, I pray that you now remove from me every single defect of character that stands in the way of my usefulness to you and my fellows. Grant me strength as I go out from here to do your bidding. Amen. Son of a gun. Back on page 63, we made a decision, and we prayed a prayer, but it was not concluded. Here we just pray to finish that prayer. The third and seventh step prayer are a single prayer interrupted by two pieces of action and a commitment. It's a package. We start out with a decision. We're going to find out what triggers the insanity to take that first drink. And then we're going to make a commitment. I'm going to pay the price to never have to do it again. And then we announce to our Heavenly Father, I'm ready to do my thing. Dear God, will you please do yours? And if you want Him to do His thing, from the middle of page 76 to page 164, find out what they did, go do it, and I promise you one thing, you'll never want to leave Alcoholics Anonymous. You may want to leave the fellowship, because I got to love getting out of a bunch of damn meetings that had nothing to do with recovery. But the program, living it one day at a time, and watching the change in the lives of people, is a real joy of what this thing's about. Next week, we're going to get into what we do in steps 8, 9, 10, and 11. I don't know if anybody told you they love you today, but I certainly do. And I frankly don't care whether the Cowboys win or not. Well, if you do, good luck. Somebody come up here and let's close this thing up.